It's Thursday, November 28th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central Podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com, the world's largest domain register. Get your promo codes at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. Hey everyone, Citrix Go to Meeting with HD Faces is a sponsor here as well, the world's best web conferencing solution. For a free 30-day trial, go to meeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code podcast. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Everyone, I got a great show for you, and it's great to be back here in the United States. Got a lot to share with you. Strap in. Here it comes.
Coming to you from a dimly lit hotel room with bad Wi-Fi and not enough power outlets, here's everyone's favorite jet-lagged geek, Todd Cochran.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central Podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from Salt Lake City, Utah, via the Geek News Central Portable Studio. Hey everyone, welcome to the show, and wow, it's been a whirlwind of a whole week. I know many of you just got over the Thanksgiving holiday, and maybe some of you are still traveling home, but I'll give you a little update of what has been happening with me over the past, 7 days or so, here in just a few moments. But of course, I want to welcome all of the longtime listeners to the show. I want to thank all of the HANA for basically being subscribed and staying subscribed. And of course, if you're a new listener to the show, thanks for being here. And yes, we're portable today. We'll be back in our Honolulu studio on Thursday and probably through the rest of the year. I think this is, I got one more trip scheduled, so we'll talk about that a little bit later. But, of course, I want to welcome you to the show. Make sure you get signed up for our newsletter and also get subscribed to the show. You can do that by going over to geeknewscentral.com. You'll find the information on how to subscribe to the show on the second column of the website. It's got all the links there to iTunes, Zoom Marketplace, whatever it may be that you use for a podcatcher. Get subscribed to the show. That way you'll never miss a single episode. The newsletter, all that does is give you everything I'm going to talk about tonight, all the links. And that way, it also reminds you that there's a new show on the street. Of course, you can watch us on the Tech Podcast channel on the Roku, Boxy, and some Samsung Smart TV. And of course, this show would not be possible without our sponsors. We want to thank GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here at the show. And I got two deals for you. They've made a new offer for you available. You can get a free private registration, a $9.99 per year value, when you register or transfer one or more domains, no quantity limit. You can protect yourself from spam, fraud, stalkers, and worse by keeping your name, address, and email and phone number private. Private registration must be added to your cart before checkout. In order to qualify for this offer, you enter the code GEEK17. Offer valid for .com, .net, .info, .biz, .mobi, .org. Here, don't wait. The offer ends on December 31st. Again, the code is GEEK17. Now, you can go over to geeknewscentral.com, and you'll see that we've got a special offer as well. Basically, it's a limited time hosting offer where you get $1.99 per month economy hosting for 3 months. So basically for $6, or actually $5.97, you'll get 3 months worth of economy hosting. It's a great offer. The promo code on that is GEEK11, but I'll have a link up to it in the show notes for you tonight. Of course, you can just visit geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy to get all the links to all the promo codes so that you can save money and help me stay in business here, keep the lights on, keep my family fed, essentially. So we appreciate your support of GoDaddy. And pick up a domain name, pick up a dedicated server, a virtual dedicated server, shared hosting account. Put a website on that. Give that away as a Christmas present. It's kind of a cool, unique thing, and you'll have some folks in your life that'll be envious. And here's the deal: set up a family member set them up a blog, so that they can start writing the history of the family. Or you can do all kinds of good stuff by putting stuff online, and especially if you're the holder of that account. Basically, all that really is going to do then is assure that as that history is written, you're going to be able to basically hand that down if you need so. But this is a great way. It's a great Christmas present to give a hosting account and a domain name for Christmas. And think of me when you go over to GoDaddy.com and my promo codes. Well, let's talk just a little bit about the past 7 days. You guys know that a week ago yesterday, I put out the Monday show on a Sunday. The reason for that was I was flying out to Okinawa Monday with my daughter, my son, and my two sons had already left the day before with my wife. And we got to Okinawa Tuesday afternoon, or Tuesday evening, their time. Went straight to the hospital, saw him for a little bit, and then we went back to the house. Let's see what happened. I'm just trying to remember the whole sequence of events. Essentially, I think my father-in-law, I think he passed away about 24 hours after we were there. And the family was there by his side. It was good that the whole family was there. So even all my wife's nephews and nieces were there as well. So the full extended family was by his bedside when he passed away. It's obviously tough on the family, but it was something that we had been expecting, and we knew that he had been in bad shape for a long time. And then what proceeded from there was basically the Japanese style of doing funeral arrangements, which I'll probably do an insider show to talk all about that, because it's really not appropriate for this show in its sense, but I've got a lot to share, a lot of info, a lot of just really culturally interesting things to talk about from the whole start of the process to the complete end. And I'll be honest with you, those of us that live here in the United States that, we generally 2, 3, 4 days and the funeral's over and the family is going to the mourning cycle. But in Japan, it's a much longer process, and a lot of things are done very differently there, completely opposite how it's done in the United States. But traditionally how it's done in the United States with most, at least most funerals I've been to. But anyway, we'll talk about that on an insider edition. I'll get that out sometime probably next week. Maybe even have some pictures for you. Nothing that would be offending, of course. Just some pictures of how things were laid out. But if you are an insider already, we want to thank you for supporting the show. We haven't put out an insider show in a while, and you can become an insider by going to geeknewscentral.com/insider. And insider counts really start at $2 a month, and we appreciate your support of the show. Well, I'm going to be here in Austin. I'm going to be here in Salt Lake City through Wednesday mid-morning. I fly back to Honolulu Wednesday. I have get back in town, I guess, like at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, soon enough to pick up the kids. My wife is still in Okinawa. She gets back, I believe, I got to check the calendar. It's all running together on Thursday. But we flew out, obviously, on Monday, and then flew back and got into Hawaii Saturday evening. Luggage didn't make it. The luggage got stuck in Guam. We actually came back through Guam, transferred through there. We were on the ground 45 minutes or so. But it's pretty crazy trip from a time zone standpoint in my body right now. And even though it's 8 p.m. here in Salt Lake, I really have no idea what time zone my body's on. And it's just one of those weird things right now that's going on. If I look at my world clock here, it's noon in Tokyo right now. So I'm supposed to be wide awake, but I'm just barely hanging on at this point. So I'm going to get the show knocked out for you. And we got a lot of tech to talk about tonight, of course. Other than that, of course, CES is coming up. So we're, believe it or not, we're 30, 40 some days away from that. So, I'm starting to almost go into a mild panic on all the stuff I've got to get done in the next month. I did want to mention, though, that the 24-hour podcast, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it this year. Just looking at the schedule, with being in Austin next week, that gets me back into Honolulu on December 10th. I potentially could do it on the weekend of the 17th. But I haven't cleared that with the with my wife yet on what we've got scheduled. But the problem is a week before Christmas, people are generally shopping, they're busy, they don't have time to come on the show. So I'll have to make a decision here in a few days on whether or not I'm going to do it or not. But it's something that's kind of on my radar, and I'll let you guys know. Okay. What else? There will be no Saturday morning tech this coming week because, again, I'll be able to do a Saturday morning tech. I'll be home. Da-da. So we'll have one this week, and we'll have a Chrome show as well. All right, let me go ahead and get into the let's take care of a sponsor message, and then we'll get into the content. Do have a good amount of tech news today. And, of course, the document that I loaded up I cannot find right now. So I'm going to have to mess around here for a second and get that loaded. But I hope everyone had a safe Turkey Day. I hope everyone was had safe travels and enjoyed their family time, of course. But, you know, this time of year, between holidays, bad weather, sick days, getting everyone in the same room for a meeting is really, it's just impossible. So that's why I recommend GoToMeeting by Citrix. With GoToMeeting, you can host your meeting online from your computer while your attendees join really from anywhere, whether they be in bed with the flu or they load the meeting on their iPad or their iPhone or their Android mobile device, whether they're traveling, snowed in, or home, it doesn't matter. GoToMeeting makes it easy to join meetings and collaborate in real time. You guys know that I love GoToMeeting. I use it extensively, almost on a daily basis. I can see the host desktop right from my smartphone or tablet. And I want you to try GoToMeeting free today. Go to the App Store or the Android Market to download the free app and start joining GoToMeeting sessions from anywhere. And you can host your own meetings with a free 30-day trial. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. As again, GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. Okay, one thing I do want to mention about being here in Salt Lake, I am staying right downtown, and it is I'm out here on a Monday, and I got in here early. I kind of slept this morning a little bit, went out for lunch, didn't really have anything on my schedule, and this town is not very busy. It's kind of creepy almost. I went to like a little mall shopping area where there was an Apple store there. I didn't go in there, but there was, you know, a bunch of the chain type of stores. You know, here it is Monday following the big weekend sales and everything, but it was a ghost town. The restaurant I went into, I think there was two people eating lunch. It was just kind of weird, and I don't know if it's just Salt Lake or what the deal was, but there was nobody out in the streets. Were kind of empty. It's kind of surreal, really. I'm used to, you know, going into a city and, you know, on a Monday, you're bustling and things are busy and there's business going on, and it is not that way in downtown Salt Lake City, Utah. So it's just a little weird. I'll be honest with you. I've been in a lot of cities, and I mentioned it to the maitre d' downstairs in the hotel. I said, is this like this all the time? Oh yeah, it's just, you know, kind of a slow-paced town. And I was kind of like, wow, very interesting. And everyone's so polite here. It's one thing I noticed from the very beginning. Very, very polite. No snobbiness. Hello, can I help you? Very cheerful. Definitely a different attitude here. And I wonder if it's, you know, the basis of the community background, I'm sure has a lot to do with it. But if you've ever been to Salt Lake, love to hear you guys' your thoughts on your visits here in the past, because it just kind of struck me as kind of weird. All right, this afternoon we got notice that mypodcast.com was shutting down. Sadly, here we have another podcast hosting company that was attempting to do podcast hosting on the cheap, and they figured out that losing money was not a winning solution, and they've pulled the plug. So they, like another podcast company, continue to announce massive losses each quarter and burn through cash, but my podcast is giving their content creators just 3 days to move their media. Now, we basically reached out to them, have not heard back from the company, trying to see if we can help any of their podcasters move. And their website's down already, and they're supposed to have 3 days left. So it appears the content creators have been shut out, and it's sad that this is happening. But businesses have to make money, and you have to charge an appropriate fee to make money as a business. And the sooner people start figuring that out, the sooner we'll see companies like this continue to, or the sooner companies figure that out, you know, basically we won't have companies going down in flames like mypodcast.com did. Let's talk, change subjects here. Susabel wrote an article about Wikipedia not worth the donation. And yeah, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of Wikipedia either. Wikipedia has had all of this, you know, they do this PBS pledge drive, and but they, you know, much of their site, if you edit something, and it's, if you know that you're, what you're writing is correct, sometimes people go in behind and change the story, and we've seen this so much with the podcast history on there, different things that have been written. And, you know, anyone can write anything they want in Wikipedia. And while there are checks and balances, as Susabel says, you know, there's obviously gaps and there's a lot of personal preferences put in there. And I think you're going to find that in history books as well. But, you know, I think at some point they're going to have to get to the point where they're going to start having to refine a lot of the topics they have in there to be historically and accurately correct, and not let just any Joe Schmo come in and change it, be it on a political basis or, oh, that's interesting. What happened here? Did we go offline? Okay. The stream, I guess my stream went offline. Well, that sucks big time. I'm trying to fix this here. Let's see if we can. Oh, that really sucks that went offline. Yeah, you know, it just, it's pretty typical here. You know, you're dealing with a bandwidth situation that is not fantastic. And once again, I died midstream. Let's see if I can bring it back up here. If it's going to allow me to come back up. Nope. It's basically throwing me the middle finger here. Well, I guess that's that for that for tonight. I guess. Well, that's too bad. I'm going to try one more thing here and see if we can get it to recover. But it's just a, you know, when you're dealing with the hotel. Wow, that's interesting. I guess getting feedback. I don't know where that feedback was coming from either. Huh. Well, let's try this again. See if we can do this. Nothing like having the show go south on you right from the very beginning. Well, let's back up for now. So anyway, getting back to the Wikipedia thing, it'd be nice if there would be, you know, a higher degree of accuracy in that. So anyway, good article by Susabel. I'll have a link up in the show notes. And let me know what you think about the Wikipedia and whether it's worth a donation or not. Emails can be sent to geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline 619-342-7365. Hey, a couple observations I made while I was in Japan, and it would become more evident this time than even before. And it's been a while since I've been. 2009 was the last time I had visited, but I really hadn't spent, you know, a dedicated amount of time with the family. I was there for some other purposes the last time. But one thing I've been noticing is that internet usage there is definitely a younger person type of thing. Folks that are my age or even maybe 30 and above are using the internet very little. An example, my mother-in-law has never used the internet. My brother-in-law, who has a pretty highfalutin job, does not use a computer even at his work. My wife has four sisters, and only one of them has a computer and the internet, as compared to my brother-in-law here in the U.S. who uses his computer at home and at work. My mom uses the internet. So, you know, it's this interesting mix. And when I got to talking to them about this, is, you know, everything is done through their mobile phones. They all have digitally connected mobile phones, and their access to the net is largely from a mobile phone and a mobile-ready websites. And generally, they do not do long-form emails, and their web surfing is done a little bit on their phones, but usually they only go to mobile-ready websites. And another thing that kind of blew them away is when I broke out my Canon, my EOS 60D, my big body camera, they were blown away that they'd asked me if I'd start enough taking photography or if I was, what I was doing, because they, all of them had said they hadn't owned even a point and click or a big body camera in over 10 years. They had used their cell phones over that versus, one of those big body cameras. So I kind of, that was kind of an interesting realization. One thing I did notice in the funeral preparations, they were faxing everybody. No emails. Everything was being done by fax. Forms were being filled out by hand. Nothing in PDFs, of course, and everything was being faxed versus where we would have probably done everything via email and on web forms. But the younger generation either had an iPhone or an Android-powered mobile device, but it seemed like everyone above 30 had more classic Japanese-styled proprietary phones. And while the mobile internet is very fast, I had a mobile MiFi that had speeds of 7.5 megs down and 1.5 megs up. The data plans there are still unlimited and cost around $35 a month. When I did a video Skype call with my mom, they were all pretty blown away with that. Even though we'd been talking to the one sister that does have the internet access via Skype for a long time, they were just pretty shocked on how clear the video and audio was. So overall, I think in Japan, the older generations continue to be disconnected from the internet. Again, while I rely on my own observations in just a short 4 or 5 day period, I think the country as a whole is not as connected as we are in the United States. And definitely the 30 and below crowd seems to be connected, but above that, I really don't think so. One thing I did notice is what they do in Japan, and so cremation is the number one thing that they do with bodies that are from the deceased, and part of their the way they honor in part of their in their shrines is they have a picture of the deceased. Willie was still alive, obviously, and most people in Japan go to a professional photographer, and at some point in their life, they get, I kind of call it the death picture. They get their picture that they want used after they die to represent them. But my father-in-law had never had that done, so they had to Photoshop a picture that they picked out amongst, basically it was a family picture we had taken 3 or 4 years ago, and they cropped him out and put him in a suit, and when they brought this back and they signed for it, they hated it, and they'd paid about $500 for someone to edit this picture, and I was flabbergasted, first of all, that they paid someone $500 to edit the picture. And they were complaining. They didn't like the image. They didn't like the picture. They just, I heard the girls just wanking about this image. So I asked them if they had the digital copy. And my sister-in-law did have the digital copy. So we got it finagled, and I got it onto my laptop, and I broke out Photoshop. And really, in about 20 minutes, I had edited the photo, done the enhancement, made some changes, and took it to the mall that was basically a quarter of a mile from the house, and had a big image printed. Cost me about like 2,000 yen or something like that, close to $20. And they ended up using that for the funeral. So they were shocked that I could do this Photoshop editing on my own computer. And we all take this for granted. And here I'm doing this on the living room table, and it's, I got the kids all around me. All the kids that are younger, the nieces and the nephews are all here watching me do this. And, when I show the sisters, they're just like, I hear this, this discussion. He did that. I can't believe he just did that. How did, so all these questions are being asked. So obviously they didn't need to have paid someone $500 to do it. I could have done it. I did do it, and it was a picture that they used for the funeral, and I am by far not an expert in Photoshop. I mean, I am like, I have the most rudimentary skills that when it comes to photo editing, but I was able to do a better job than this dude they paid big money for. So it just, for some instances, I see where they are way behind. They rely on a lot of people to do a lot of different things where we take for granted and we do here. It's definitely a big service industry where people have specific jobs that they do and they're very good at it, but it is kind of it was an interesting dynamic to watch. But anyway, we'll talk more about the rest of this on the Insider program when I do that. But I've got the Back from Japan observations up at Geek News Central. All right, on Gizmodo, an iPhone 4 spontaneously caught fire in flight. Apparently, on a flight from Sydney, Australia, the phone started smoking and heating up, and the back of it cracked, and it didn't explode. The stewardess did something, but the Australian Transportation Safety Bureau is looking at this iPhone 4 to figure out what the heck was going on. But the guy was not using his phone in any weird way, but the iPhone 4 started to glow red and smolder with dense fumes in the middle of a flight again to Sydney. So kind of scary stuff there. And when I was an aircrew guy in the Navy, we called it fumes in the tube. And basically, you know, you're in the tube of the aircraft. Fumes in the tube is not a good thing. That's a time to become very heightened and aware of what's going on. Because if you're smelling something, there's usually fire closely following. But I guess the stewardess took care of it. But we will see where this leads in any additional investigation. All right, kind of a weird deal right now. And this is something that, you know, I don't normally talk about on the show. But apparently there's a guy in the Netherlands, a guy that is a virologist. His name is Ron Fauchier. And he has basically been messing with the avian flu virus. And what he has done in his laboratory is he has been able to, through 10 generations of the avian flu using, I don't know if he's using mice or he's using ferrets, he's been able to get the avian flu virus that he's been playing with, and I say the word playing with, to get it to a strain that would have the power to kill half the human population. This guy conducted his research at the Aramas Medical Center, and he said it. Admittedly, this new strain is probably one of the most dangerous viruses you can make, and he was allowed to do this, and he's going to publish his research. Now, we've got all kinds of whack jobs in this world, and the last thing we want to do is give someone the bio recipe to do bioterrorism on us, and yet they're going to produce a paper on how they did this, and they're going to publicly publish it so that scientists can be more prepared when something like this, you know, why isn't there a back channel where they can distribute this to scientists and the people that need to know without publicly putting this out here? I just don't get it, and I've got to, you know, I have to agree with the writer of this article at Gizmodo. I have to say, you know, hold your horses. We, you know, we already have enough nasty stuff that are being done in different laboratories, I would assume, all over the world. But you're going to go ahead and publicize this? You know, people, these guys should not be allowed to do this stuff. They really shouldn't. Okay, the shortest distance between a leaf blower and basically passing out. I'm just going to link to this. It's a funny video. It just shows you that there's a segment of our population that continues to do stupid things with power tools, and you'll have a good laugh at it, and the link will be up in the show notes. For those of you thinking of buying something from Apple, Apple has free shipping on everything until December 22nd. So while it's not cyber, you know, really Cyber Monday's pretty much over here, Apple is still dangling a small shopping incentive today, offering free shipping on any and everything you buy online or through the App Store, Apple Store, from now until December 22nd. So this is big. This is good. So if you are buying a big ticket items, you're going to get some savings on that shipping cost. I wonder if that applies to Hawaii as well. Moving on here over to GigaOm, T-Mobile's 42 megabits per second HSPA Plus is fast, but as some comparisons have been done, it's really not as fast as LTE. T-Mobile has been talking up their capabilities of its souped-up 42 megabits per second HPSA Plus network, claiming it can rival even the new LTE networks deployed by Verizon and AT&T. Over the past few weeks, some network testers have been basically looking to see what really is the true speed. And what they have found is that On average, the HSPA network of T-Mobile has been averaging 7 megs down and 1.4 megs up, as compared to Verizon of 11.4 megs down and 4.7 megs up. So the the claims of T-Mobile being super fast, while they are, they sound fantastic, they're not living up to the true speeds that they're advertising, and largely because they're probably not bonding enough of the network together to make it happen. But the link will be up in the show notes. You guys can check it out. Of course, we're going to talk about AT&T and T-Mobile more here a little bit later in the show. Facebook is saying that they're planning their IPO in April or June, and with the goal of raising $10 billion. They're feeling that this could end up being a valuation of about $100 billion to raise the $10 billion. And this is big. This would put Facebook's $100 billion potential valuation in perspective. Consider the following year. Cisco is valued at $96.8 billion. Intel is worth $119.46 billion. Facebook would be worth about half of the Google market cap of $190 billion. Microsoft market cap is $209. Disney is worth $61 billion. Amazon is worth $88.3 billion. So Facebook's moving into some serious territory here, with a valuation approaching $100 billion. Just amazing. It really, really is. For those of you that have followed the tech space quite a bit, you'll know the name Mark Anderson. And it is being mulled around that Mark Anderson may be in play to become the CEO of Yahoo. So this is an interesting move here. And Anderson currently serves on the board of Hewlett-Packard, and he runs one of the biggest venture firms in the Silicon Valley. And so I guess we'll have to see where this goes. But, the question is, and this would be a good guy to come in there. He definitely would clean house. But there would obviously be some friction here between co-founder Anderson and Jerry Yang. And because, those two are friends, it would be interesting to see how that would work out. We'll see. We'll see where this goes. No email. He hasn't responded to any email, so must be he's definitely talked with the Yahoo folks. All right, ad targeting within Facebook is being really heavily questioned right now by the European Commission, and is basically the European Commission is going after web companies over their failure to explain how their ad targeting system works. But they're really not going after the bullseye, because it's confusing targeting with data protection, which are really not quite the same issue. So they're claiming that basically they want to know how Facebook is really micro targeting each one of us as we go to their website with advertising and offers. So, I don't know. I just don't pay attention to the advertising on Facebook that much. I don't know if you guys do, but, I'm hearing people are saying they're having huge success with, huge success with being able to, direct specific advertising to people, and they're reacting to it. So, I don't know. Do you guys think that the advertising being targeted to you within Facebook is that effective? And do you think this is something the European Commission or even the FCC should look at, or the FTC should look at here in the United States? We already tell people a lot of information. We fill out our profile information. We give them our high school, our universities, our employers. We give them, where we live. We give them demographics about our age. We tell them all kinds of things in our profiles. Now, the question is whether or not they use that or not. I don't know. But I'm assuming that they do. And, also, too, if you're telling them who your employer is, that gives them access to, they'll kind of know what kind of wages based on your title. You don't even have to tell them what your wages are. They're going to know a range specifically as well. So we'll see if these companies comply with the European Commission's demand to give up this info. But again, there is some confusion there on what they're really asking for. All right, for those that are programmers out there, the Google conference has been moved to June, extended to 3 days. And unlike last year, where there was just basically people had to try to get tickets by competing for those tickets online, you're not going to be able to buy a ticket. You're going to have to, if you want to do the Google I/O event, you're going to have to actually show some code. And they're going to have to compete for spots through a competition, and which is good. This is good good news, and Google is advising attendees to refrain from making travel arrangements until the new application is revealed in February of 2012. So not everyone's going to be able to get tickets that used to get tickets, and I think Google is just trying to tighten the process up there, which is good. The Bloomberg is reporting that the founding contract signed by Steve Jobs could fetch $150,000 at Sotheby's. Of course, on April 1st, 1976, Steve Jobs got together with Steve Wozniak and Ronald Wayne to draft a three-page contract that established Apple Computer, and that paperwork is going to be auctioned off, and they're estimating that that's going to be worth $100,000 to $150,000 at auction. They're showing the pictures of this stuff, so, you know, just make a photocopy of it and print it out if you really want to see it. Why spend the money? I've never understood people's fascination with buying that stuff, but some people are collectors of that kind of stuff. All right, this is kind of an interesting development. Imagine that you're a company and you want to hire a international worker, but you would like them to work in an incubator style and close to the United States. So what's going on is that a new company called Blue Seed is seeking to bypass the political process and solve the problem by buying a ship. I mean, basically what's happening here is that companies are having a hard time getting people in here on with a legal immigration status. And they're trying to bring talented young people born outside of the United States to come to the Bay Area. So what they're proposing here is that they're going to buy a ship, a cruise ship, like a carnival type ship, and they're going to make that an incubator, and it's going to be a floating year-round hackathon type of ship with connectivity, and basically they're going to park this out in international waters, but yet make it close enough where you can jump on a helicopter and fly out and get on and do business, and if you need to bounce off as needed, and yet have the people, have your programming team close to the United States. So this is kind of curious that this is going to if this is going to work, because what they're trying to do as well is that they're going to try to see if they can kind of tweak the American immigration system by basically making it so that the residents will be able to make regular trips to the mainland. So in other words, they can come in as a visitor and stay for a couple of weeks, and then they would have to travel back to that international destination, that ship, and to reset their visa. So kind of curious. Oh, they're going to provide regular ferry service between the ship and the United States. They say that residents would need to do their actual work, such as writing code on the ship, but they could come to the United States just as a visitor. So this is kind of an interesting proposal. If you're going to do that, why not just have the people sequestered in a programming farm in the country of choice? Seems like it would be a lot cheaper, but we'll see. We'll see if someone's going to put a ship out in international waters and have programming teams on there. Hey, a New Jersey DMV worker has been accused of selling identities for $200 a pop. Prosecutors have charged the two New Jersey Motor Vehicle Commission employees with selling names, addresses, birth dates, and social security numbers of unsuspecting residents for as little as $200 per identity. And basically, they arrested these two folks. You know, $200, that's pretty cheap for a real ID that will work. The two state employees, 20 and 31-year-old individuals, have been arrested and charged with official misconduct. So I'm just wondering if they are going to be able to find all these fake IDs that they basically prepared for people at $200 a pop. Seems like facing a significant amount of jail time for a very small amount of money. All right, let's talk just a little bit here about the AT&T T-Mobile deal. over the weekend, AT&T has withdrawn their bid for T-Mobile. And the move is said to be temporary, but the FCC, you know, has continued to fight this merger. The AT&T has decided to take its ball and go home, and they've basically announced that they're ready to take a $4 billion hit on the fourth quarter of this year, which accounts for the breakup fee. It will own Dutch Telecom if the deal falls apart. And they feel now that the T-Mobile deal is almost not going to be possible. But at the same time, in a weird move, according to Bloomberg Businessweek, AT&T has threatened to sue the FCC if agency ignores the T-Mobile pullout. So does that mean that the FCC is basically saying, okay, we've got your application, but it's still on file. We're not going to let you to withdraw it. But so what AT&T has said, it plans to sue the FCC if the agency doesn't let the company withdraw its application to buy the smaller rival for $39 billion. The AT&T is saying the FCC is obligated by its own rules to honor AT&T's move to rescind its application to acquire T-Mobile USA Incorporated, the general counsel of AT&T said today in a blog entry. So this is a response from the FCC, was basically say that that they would consider this. And they're going to, the FCC is considering now whether they're going to discharge this with prejudice or something, which would not allow AT&T to come back on a new round to try to acquire T-Mobile. So I think this is a big win. I was always against the merger myself, and we'll see where this leads. But definitely will be a big cash windfall for T-Mobile if AT&T has to fork over $4 billion in cash. Even with the flooding going on in Thailand, Seagate has been able to make their quarterly numbers. They shipped 43 million units in December, generating about $2.8 billion in revenue. And while the Thai floods continue to crimp supplies of disk drive components, the Seagate factories in the country haven't been affected by the disaster. But unlike the two biggest competitors, Western Digital and Toshiba Corp, which who have major plants in flood zones, and I like, there's a specific drive I buy for my TriCaster that's a Western Digital drive, and I bought those two replacements of those just in case when the prices started to increase. So the price of those drives have nearly doubled here in the past couple of weeks. But Seagate has made their numbers and continued to move forward. There's a lot of recaps and timelines that are I'm going to put up in the show notes on the AT&T T-Mobile deal. Should have that stacked with the other one. Have that link up in the show notes up for you. All right, Rovi is an interesting company. I've talked with Rovi several times in my dealings with the business we do at Raw Voice. And Rovi announced today some new marketing tools to involve the connected consumer. And you guys knew this was coming. For those of you that have set-top boxes, game consoles, different types of things where you're doing online and not necessarily getting hit with advertising because you're not connected to your TV anymore, they're starting to really target smart TV advertising, talking about its awareness and effectiveness, and this really plays into some things that we are seeing as well. And basically, I'm pretty excited about what Rovi has announced today and some study results, and that it's just going to show that there's going to be a great market for basically for targeted advertising within or new marketing tools within these set-top boxes. And I know you guys don't want to hear that, but we got to pay for this baby somehow. And it's, you know, it's not as, how should I say it, in your face as traditional TV is. It's more light type of advertising, and I think it's going to work out well. So I have this link up on the Rovi stuff and in the show notes. Well, we all know there's a wireless spectrum crunch right now, and it's, you know, there people are starting to say this is starting to hurt customers a lot more. And in the next couple of years, because of bandwidth shortage, I think we're all going to be impacted. And I think we see that already with the data caps that they put in place. But there is some there is some desire to make more spectrum available, and there's a lot of pressure on the FCC to do so. So it's going to be an interesting year to watch this. There's a good article about the full layout of this from the folks over at extremetech.com, and I have the link up in the show notes on that. Well, the feds had a great Cyber Monday as well. What they did is they cracked down on counterfeiters. Over 150 websites were shut down today by federal authorities for selling or distributing counterfeit goods such as pro sports jerseys, golf equipment, DVD sets, footwear, handbags, and sunglasses. This is the eighth of a series of raids called Operation In Our Sights, which is a cooperative effort of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, in other words, ICE, and Homeland Security Investigators, the National Intellectual Property Rights Coordination Center, and the U.S. Department of Justice. So this was a another raid, as we saw last year. And those sites that have been shut down now display that world-famous notice that they've been closed for copyright infringement. I don't have the full list of sites that were shut down. Of course, there's been massive criticism of their actions on doing this before, and some innocent sites being shut, closed out. So we'll see what happens with this particular group and whether anyone that was not supposed to have been shut down did get shut down. So we'll keep you advised on that. One thing I have never used, I've never used the YouTube editor to enhance video edit. It never enhanced my videos once I post them to YouTube. But apparently, there's a lot of people that are now using the YouTube editor. And with the edit video feature being updated, allowing users to modify already posted videos without having to re-upload them, people say it's been a game changer for them. And they said over 4 million videos have been enhanced by 2 million unique users, according to YouTube's product manager, Jason Troff. I guess I'm going to have to go and look at this and see what they've done and what they've made available. And what these tools are, I've really just kind of glanced over them in the past. But if you've used any of the YouTube editors, I'd love to hear from you and let me know what you think. Again, you can send an email to the show at geeknews@gmail.com, voicemail hotline 619-342-7365. Hey, over on GigaOM, there's a great cord cutter holiday gift guide available. And, of course, the specific devices that I've been promoting are in this list: the Roku, the Boxy, the Amazon Kindle Fire, the HD Home Run. I'm not familiar with this box. What is this? The HD Home Run, priced between $80 and $140. You get TV from major broadcast networks, often HD. I'm going to have to check that one out. WD, this is Western Digital Live Wire Powerline Adapter. Of course, that helps you get the internet where it needs to be when you don't have an internet cable, Ethernet cable close to a box. So I have that link up in the show notes. And the final article for tonight's On the Road show is a new smoke detector that lets you know when your house is burning down through SMS. And this is available for about $140. And whenever your alarm detector goes off, it sends you a predefined text message up to four recipients. It basically says, hey, dude, the smoke detector's going off. Your house is on fire. My advice to you is just have an alarm system that's linked to your reporting company so that they can send the fire department and you don't have to make that call. It's done automatically for you through your alarm monitoring service. All right, kind of a short show tonight. And obviously, I'm here on the road, so I'm semi-zoning out because of the time zone changes I've been through over the past week or so. But we'll have a regular full enhanced show on Thursday back in the studio, and hopefully no more Ustream crashes during the show. And obviously we won't be in a hotel room. We'll be in the studio in Hawaii. And look forward to bringing you that show. Again, if you got any questions or any comments on today's show, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. It's been my pleasure to bring you the show tonight, and we'll see you on Thursday from the studio in Honolulu. Until then, take care and aloha.